WNYC Studios is supported by Earth Justice. As a national legal nonprofit, Earth Justice has more than 200 full-time lawyers who fight for a healthy environment. They're challenging utilities to lower your power bill and fight climate change by helping communities achieve clean, affordable energy for all. From stopping new gas plants to helping advance the growth of rooftop solar, Earth Justice is accelerating the clean energy transition so we can all breathe easy. Visit earthjustice.org/power to learn more. That's earthjustice.org/power.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. I'm John Schaefer. Normally, we have music played live in our studio, but today's pianist, Oscar Levant, is in no position to do that, being, you know, long dead and all that. But in the middle of the 20th century, his Gershwin performances, like this 1945 version of The Rhapsody in Blue, were the best-selling classical records in the country. And he was the mid-century pre-digital version of a social media star, a ubiquitous, witty presence on American TV and films, but a troubled figure off-screen. He's the subject of a mammoth 8-volume box set called Rhapsody in Blue, The Extraordinary Life of Oscar Levant. It features never-before-heard recordings and an essay by Michael Feinstein, perhaps our leading curator of the American songbook, and the guy that we go to for all things Gershwin and Gershwin-related. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you, John. Glad to be here.
So how do you get from, I guess it's not such a big step to go from being the Gershwin guy to being the Levant guy.
I became obsessed with Oscar Levant when I was a kid, which is not a good thing considering how acerbic he was. I was sort of a smart aleck kid, but I discovered Oscar Levant through Gershwin, because I became obsessed with Gershwin, and then I discovered his recording of Rhapsody in Blue, and then started learning about him. He died in 1972, and there was a memorial program to him hosted by Jack Parr in January of 1973, and I became aware that he was not only a pianist, but had written 3 books and was this world-class wit, so much so that even Groucho Marx would not appear on his television show.
Really?
Yes.
Well, you know, I also came to him first as the Gershwin pianist, you know, those recordings of the 3 preludes and the Rhapsody in Blue, the Concerto in F, all that kind of stuff. I had no idea until this box set came out with your essay that, you know, he was so much more. I mean, in the middle of the 20th century, it was possible in America to be both famous and, quote unquote, a classical musician, right?
Yes, and Levant was one of the first people that broke down those barriers, because there still was stigma if someone appeared in Hollywood movies like An American in Paris or Barclays of Broadway that they weren't a serious pianist. But he was. I think people were so terrified of him and so fascinated by him, and he was so talented that he played with the New York Philharmonic. He played with Toscanini, and then he made movies and accompanied Al Jolson and Bing Crosby.
And as we'll hear, then, you know, sort of insinuated himself into America's living rooms, appearing on radio and TV shows. But before we get to any of that, I want to play an excerpt from this V-disc. Explain what a V-disc was.
V-discs were wartime recordings that were made only for people in the armed forces services. And they were non-commercial, and therefore they had carte blanche to use recordings from any source. And they were supposed to be destroyed, I guess, after they were used, but a lot of people saved them. And the V-disc producers made a recording transcribed from Oscar's soundtrack from the movie Rhapsody in Blue of a 2.5-minute excerpt of the final movement of Gershwin's Concerto in F. It's wonderful. It's with the Warner Brothers Symphony Orchestra conducted by Ray Heindorf, and it's Levant at his finest.
Let's hear it. It's now, this is part of the box set.
No, this is from my private collection, because we don't have time to play his definitive recording from 1942, which is on the box set. So this is like, this is an hors d'oeuvre.
Very nice. All right. From Michael Feinstein's private archives of Oscar Levant.
¶¶
That is a kind of a 2.5 minute condensed, the Reader's Digest version, I guess.
Exactly.
Of the Concerto in F by Gershwin, featuring Oscar Levant at the piano. These V discs are an amazing story. V for victory. It was part of the war effort to make these discs. The record companies weren't supposed to be doing commercial stuff. So instead, you got these amazing artists to do stuff for the troops, essentially.
Amazing. And they recorded live. They recorded in nightclubs and at the Hollywood Bowl. So they documented the American musical cultural life in a way that otherwise would have been impossible.
Yeah.
Because of unions.
Well, and now I'm thinking, this was recorded in what, 1943, during the war?
Yes.
And I'm thinking, you know, if I'm a GI and I get this record and it's this classical pianist, you know, these days, what GI wants to get a record by Igor Levit or, you know? But back then, it would have been, oh, Oscar Levant, he's kind of cool. How did that happen? How did he make that crossover?
He was born in Pittsburgh in 1906. He came to New York to study piano when he was 15. His parents dropped him off. His mother dropped him off. And suddenly, he was experiencing New York for the first time, and he quit his piano lessons and started hanging around Broadway and started accompanying singers. He became a man in New York, and then he started playing with orchestras on radio because he could sight read anything from pop to the most fiendishly difficult classical music. And eventually, because of his wit, his witticisms, which became legendary around Broadway, he was invited to appear on a 1938 radio show called Information Please, which was a quiz show where they would ask all the experts questions, and if they didn't know the answer, the person who sent in the question would get $5.
Wow.
And Oscar was amazing. He was just a guest on one of the early shows, and he became a regular. And as a result of being on Information Please, where he would occasionally play little snippets at the piano, he was invited to appear on radio shows performing Gershwin, Rhapsody in Blue and such, and then the music of other composers. And then he performed his own piano concerto and other works. So it was an odd way, long after he thought his concert career was finished, he had a career as a concert pianist.
On the radio and
on the
TV.
Radio, and then he started doing concerts, and he sold out everywhere.
Yeah. It's an amazing story. Much of it is told in the 8 volumes, more than 8 hours of music that's in this box set, for which you wrote this kind of big biographical essay, and a lot of the photos are from your archives, right?
Yes.
Also in those archives are not only these pieces of music that we're hearing, but you've also brought in some examples of the kind of wit and the banter that he could just kind of easily fall into, it seems, with almost anybody.
Anybody, yes.
So tell me about the show Words About Music. When is this from?
This recording is from 1956, March 3rd, 1956. Words About Music was a local Los Angeles live television show aired on Saturday nights at 11 p.m. They had a panel of experts to speak about music. It was Oscar Levant, Elsa Lanchester. Then they had different guests every week, and everyone from Natalie Wood to Broderick Crawford to, I mean, you name it, everybody went on that show. And they would have a songwriter who would play a new song, a famous songwriter, and then the panel would judge whether they thought it was going to be a hit or not. And Only one kinescope of the live show exists, but I found about 2 months ago in a vault somewhere, it's a long story, an air check of this show in which Oscar starts speaking with the host, Frank Duvall, about Lena Horne, and then it goes into his own eccentricities.
Which were truly eccentric.
By the way, did any of us hear Lena singing at the Ambassador last month? Did you hear her at the Ambassador, Oscar?
Didn't everybody?
I hope so.
I don't know how anybody could be offended by Lena Horne singing anything. She's an elegant and exquisite and great artist, and I'm a great friend and admirer of her. As a matter of fact, she invited me to the Coconut Grove, but I couldn't go. I haven't traveled that far a distance in a long, about 6 months.
What's the matter? Don't you ever get out of the house?
As a matter of fact, I don't. I have an agoraphobia.
Agoraphobia? What does that mean?
It's a fear of open places.
Do you have any other phobias, Oscar?
I have all the phobias. I have a claustrophobia.
What's that one?
A fear of small places.
Well, do you have acrophobia?
Acrophobia?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Well, that's a fear of high places.
Oh, boy, I sure do. I can't sit in the balcony. Every time I sit in the balcony, I want to throw myself into the orchestra.
Why don't you do it, Oscar? I mean, no. Excuse me. Why don't you do it?
Actually, I would be glad to do it, but I have a fear of mingling with strange people.
So now that's clearly improvised.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's not scripted. He's just kind of winging it. And, you know, he's funny, but he's also getting to kind of the sort of to some of the hard truths of his life. Right. I mean, off screen, there were kind of demons that beset him.
Yes, he was always very eccentric. He had many, many phobias, and they became worse and worse. He started to experience stage fright, and he couldn't walk through a door unless he did these little rituals with his hands and do these sort of prayers. He had all these fears that something terrible was going to happen to him. And he smoked nonstop, incessantly, and drank 30 cups of coffee a day, and eventually he had a heart attack in the early 50s right before he made the film The Bandwagon with Fred Astaire, and the doctor prescribed Demerol, and Oscar became addicted to that drug. Prior to that time, he never did drugs, he never drank, but he became a drug addict, and he never recovered from that, and he had several nervous breakdowns. By 1958, he stopped playing the piano because he was losing his coordination, which was heartbreaking. And then he spent the rest of his life being a personality. He had a local Los Angeles television show where he would sometimes play. And he wrote some books and became known as this eccentric wit. And the tragedy, of course, is that his first love was that of classical music.
Yeah.
And it killed him. It literally killed him eventually that he could no longer play the music he loved.
Well, and one of the eye-opening things about this box set, again called Rhapsody in Blue, The Extraordinary Life of Oscar Levant, is just how wide-ranging his classical music tastes were. You know, it wasn't just Gershwin, and it wasn't even just Bach and Beethoven. It was Shostakovich, and there's a piece by Federico Mompou.
Yes,
and wonderful and Catalan composer who was not well known at all.
He loved to play Mompou. He'd play on Jack Parr one time. He played a little bit of it, and he loved these miniatures, and he played a lot of Prokofiev, and he also knew a lot of piano concerti that he never waxed, as they say, Sasson and many Mozart, and he had this encyclopedic memory where he could recall anything instantaneously. And there's a story that Prokofiev came to New York, and at Steinway Hall, somebody asked him to play one of his concertos, and he started to play it, and he stumbled, and Oscar was there, and he said, "Move over," and Oscar played the rest of it with the composer watching.
Presumably not for a paying audience.
No, just because he could, as they say.
So, even more amazingly, for a guy who was so deeply into classical music, he was also a pretty good hand at writing a pop song. And
yes, he wrote 80 popular songs starting in 1927 and stopped writing songs about 1938.
Uh-huh. And one of the things from your archives that you brought in is from 1948. This is Oscar with Bing Crosby. And at some point during this little bit of banter, some of this does sound scripted to me.
Some of it is, and you can hear clearly where he goes off script, to the delight of Bing. And he was dangerous, you know, in that way. And that's why it was wonderful that Bing knew that he'd get a great show out of him in spite of the dangers.
But somewhere along the way, we get a chance to hear a little bit of Oscar Levant's most famous pop song, right?
Yes, and you hear how wonderfully he played pop music of that time.
So this is this a TV show or a radio show?
It's the Philco Radio Time, November 11th, 1948.
Say, who's the next composer you got in mind, Oscar?
A very important one, and I feel rather guilty for overlooking him for so long.
His name?
Ah, it doesn't escape me for a moment. Levant, Oscar Levant.
Oh, yes, Oscar Levant, the composer of such songs as I'm Just a Backward Boy Looking for a Forward Girl. Eskimo Sweetheart, Don't Blubber Over Me. And when you walked out with your shoes on, I knew you were gone for good. Smashes, everyone a smash.
Those were real smashes, all right. But I wrote some mild hits, too.
Little things, little roundelays?
That lulled the country. I wrote one song, for instance, that even my friends didn't like, called, gee, that's the first laugh I ever interrupted. Called Blame It On My Youth.
Blame It? Oh, yeah.
Would you like to sing it, Bing?
Well, why don't you get Jolson to sing it?
How can Jolson sing Blame It On My Youth?
Well, then I'll do it, and I better hurry, too.
If I expected love when first we kissed, blame it on my youth. If only just for you I did exist, blame it on my youth. If I cried a little bit when first I learned the truth, don't blame it on my heart, blame it on my youth.
You got my Brunswick key there, Jack. That's my Brunswick key, you are.
You mean the old uncollector's item?
That's right. See, I remember another one of your tunes, Oscar. It was very popular around 1930 or 31. Remember that tune called Lady Play Your Mandolin? Would you accompany me on
that? Delighted.
Delighted. We're gone. Lady, play your mandolin. Lady, play your mandolin. That was an introduction, wasn't it? Oscar, attendez pour le moment. Lay. Where are you going to play a vamp?
We'll play a vamp.
A vamp?
Play a vamp for about 2 or 3 hours, and
this
then you'll
come. This is a big, big production, this
yeah.
thing.
Lady, play your mandolin. Lady, sing your song of sin. Though I fear you, let me hear you play. Play your mandolin.
Say, that sounded just like two pianos playing there. Oscar Levant proceeds solo.
That is Oscar Levant and Bing Crosby from Michael Feinstein's archives from the Philco Radio Time show.
Yes, yes.
1948. And clearly Bing is expecting one thing to happen. And Oscar is saying, nah, I'm going to do this instead. And
yes.
He's all up and down that keyboard in a way that, you know, he's showing off.
Yes.
But it's also really kind of subversive and funny. At the same time.
Yeah, yeah. He loved to put a lot of dissonances into his music because he studied with Arnold Schoenberg. So he had a very wide or large musical palette, and it all got mixed up.
So with this box set called Rhapsody in Blue, The Extraordinary Life of Oscar Levant, most of the music that's in the set has been issued before. Much of it has never been on CD before. But there were also one or two things that haven't been heard, right? I mean, did they raid your archives for more than just the photos?
Originally, they were only going to release things that had been previously issued. But I persuaded them to include two other tracks because I felt that they were important. One, Oscar playing Bach, because there's no other document of him playing Bach. And the other is a little piece that he composed, which only exists in this recording, which I had gotten from Oscar's widow. And happily, they found in the vaults a thing called Blue Plate Special.
Someone's laughing at the end of that.
Yes.
That is astonishing. Any idea when he wrote that piece?
Sometime in the 1940s. It's not written down anywhere because I've gone through his entire archive trying to find it. And the only published piano piece that he wrote was the Piano Sonatina, 1932. And the other piano things that he created are all sort of ephemeral, but this one he preserved.
Wow. It sounds almost like the famous Kitten on the Keys. You know, this is the lysergic version of that. It's just completely trippy, and the harmonies are very angular and dissonant. It's a very strange piece.
It is, and there's another piece he composed for the movie Romance on the High Seas that was cut from the film, which was called Rumba Rhapsody or something like that. And it's just like this. It's even harder to play than this. It's unplayable, and he just goes, he zooms through it. And again, it has all these subversive dissonances.
Yeah.
And he appreciated and loved 12-tone music as much as he liked Bach.
Yeah.
And he composed 12-tone music.
So now this is available for the first time as part of the box set.
Yes.
We're talking with Michael Feinstein, the curator of the American Songbook, which, you know, I mean, Gershwin is such a central part of that. And Levant, as you mentioned, he became a central part of the Gershwin legend by really, I mean, he was sort of the prime mover in getting Gershwin's music out there after Gershwin had died, right?
Very much so. After Gershwin's death, Oscar was constantly pushing symphonies to program the Rhapsody in Blue and Concerto in F. Prior to that time, when Gershwin was alive, they would play it, but they didn't want to include it. And Oscar was the guy who really helped make those pieces known in every household.
All right. Now, you mentioned that, you know, we had this kind of shining moment in the 40s and 50s where he was this bon vivant. He was on radio, TV. He was in movies. 1952, you said, is when he has the heart attack, right?
Yes.
He then gets addicted to Demerol. He's had these kind of fears, the phobias, stage fright, and now he's got addiction to deal with. Doesn't stop him from going on TV and talking about this stuff. I mean, that would be daring today.
Yes.
I can't imagine what people were thinking in 1956 or 58 or 66, you know, when Oscar Levant appeared on their TV screens. Just who knew what he was going to say?
Well, he was taken off the air several times. He had a local Los Angeles television show starting in 58. It was a 90-minute live show. And he literally would sometimes, depending on what was going on, he would check out of Mount Sinai Mental Institution and come and do his television show and go back. So he would say, this is Oscar Levant appearing courtesy of Mount Sinai. And he was thrown off the air one time because the sponsor was the Emerson Unbreakable Radio. So they said, you know, throw it around a little bit, show that it's unbreakable. And he says, I'll show you how unbreakable it is. And he smashes the thing to pieces. So they lost the sponsors. You know, that was one problem. And then he said something unkind about Mae West, and again he was off the air. But he always came back because people would write letters and they'd threaten the network or the TV station, yeah, we want Oscar. People ate it up. And as you said, this is a time, this is the 50s, the halcyon days, and suddenly there's this man who is a maniac, but he's so funny.
So he and Jack Parr had, you know, a kind of on-screen thing that went over a couple of different iterations. And again, dipping into your archives, tell us when this this little tete-a-tete with Jack Parr took place.
I think this is the first time Oscar appeared on Jack Parr's show in 1958. And this was the year that he was ubiquitous on television and making a lot of recordings. And it's also the year he stopped concertizing. So I think that he was on the verge of retiring. I don't know if he had actually stopped, but this was amazing. I mean, he was so brilliant on the Parr show that Jack had him back several times afterwards. And Oscar always watched his show, and Parr referred to him as Oscar Levant, that nut. And June, Oscar's wife, said, how dare he? I'm so angry. He can't call you a nut. And Oscar said, well, I wouldn't want to go to court over it.
So this is Oscar Levant on Jack Parr's show. This is before The Tonight Show, obviously, right?
I'm not sure. Hmm. No. I take it... Jack was on The Tonight Show. He left The Tonight Show and started his own program. So this is running concurrently with The Tonight Show.
Okay. From 1958, this is Oscar Levant in rare form.
Jack, I just want to comment on our relationship. All right. It's been fleeting but unendurable.
God love you.
I'd kiss you, only I'd get arrested.
God, they've been all excited about having you. This is a big thing to me to have you.
Gee, I haven't been invited out in 2 years.
But you feel a little bit better. You
know, I was out to dinner. I'm trying to overcome my impregnable mediocrity. As far as the way I feel, it's too late for sweets and too soon for flowers.
Oh, you're going to be all right. Listen, you're going to be swell. We just keep moving around. What do you do for exercise?
I stumble and then I fall into a coma.
That is a great line. It's a great line on live TV.
Yes. He also, he was on a TV show with Zsa Zsa Gabor, and he said, oh, Zsa Zsa, you've discovered the secret of perpetual middle age. And he said he knew Doris Day before she was a virgin.
Yeah, yeah.
And Elizabeth Taylor ought to get a divorce and settle down. I mean, he had one after another. And they were extemporaneous. He would repeat them later, but they were of the moment.
You know, he seems to have been made for these times. You know, he would have been a Twitterverse star, you know. I mean, I keep thinking of Kanye West. You know?
Must you?
Curse you, Oscar Levant, for making me think of... No. Yeah. You know, someone who's both a musical figure, but for much of the country, not a musical figure, but just like somebody who... The mouth that roared, as
yes.
Howard Cosell was once described.
Yes.
What do you think his place would be in the 21st century digital landscape?
I think he would have been embraced by everybody, because the one thing that we lack in the world today, one of the things that people crave, is people being truthful and honest, people being themselves without artifice. That's why people love Judge Judy, you know, because she doesn't give a rat's ass, and she is who she is. You know what I mean? It's we want people who are real and who are themselves. And he not only was himself, but he was so brilliant. He made people laugh, and he made people see the folly of existence.
Yeah, and I guess the double edge to that sword was that people did forget that he was like this seriously gifted musician at one point.
Yes, that's the tragedy of his life.
Well, we've got 8 volumes worth of proof that he was, in fact, a pretty astonishing musician. The box set is called Rhapsody in Blue, The Extraordinary Life of Oscar Levant, who sounds, Michael, as if he actually packed several different lives into one extraordinary 65-year span.
He did a lot, and he burned himself out as a result of it.
And is there more where this came from in terms of archival material?
Sony has probably another 5 or 6 hours of unreleased Levant material, much of it prime. So if this set does well, they will issue the rest.
All right. Michael, it's always a pleasure to have you here with us in our studio, and this has been a real ear opener. Thank you so much.
My great pleasure, John. Thank you.
Michael Feinstein, my guest on Soundcheck. That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Hear other Soundcheck podcasts and see other videos online at newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. Our video producer is Justin Sergi. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us. ¶¶